Our guest today is a second ward alderman. He was elected just over 4.5 years ago and re-elected 7 months ago. Prior to being elected alderman, our guest today served as chief of staff in the Cook County Commissioner's Office of Finance Chairman John Daly. He earned his bachelor's degree from the University of Illinois at Springfield, Sangamon State. And he is so smart that he has his wife with him here today, Colleen. Let's give her a round of applause, Colleen. Being the spouse of a candidate or a public services servant is probably the toughest job I could think of, so we salute you, Colleen. He, not only is his wife here, his mother is watching us on live stream, so, and his, your mother's family is here. So Colleen's mom and her family are here. Now, where are you? There you are. Stand up. Give them a round of applause. Thank you very much. Thank you. I think it's always impressive because being in public service is a family affair. And his mother, who's always in attendance here, is home, as I said, watching on live stream. And their fabulous son, 4-year-old son, next week, Ryan, will see it tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Alderman Brian Hopkins. Brian? All right, Your Honor.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you so much, Jay. This is my fourth City Club appearance, my third time keynoting, and it's as much an honor this time as it was the first time. Really, I can't say enough to the board of directors of the City Club. What you've done here, this policy forum that you've created, in many ways, it's the highlight of the year for me. I'll never forget my first City Club appearance. I felt like I really matured as an elected official when I was invited to speak here, because this is where ideas come together. You know, we have Ideas Week in Chicago, and I know there's a lot of people in this room that participate in that. Every week is Ideas Week at the City Club. This is a serious policy forum to discuss issues that we are facing, that we contend with, and we put politics aside to do that here. Politics is a very big part of our world, and it's a part of Chicago's history, but we put it aside for the purpose of talking about ideas that can move us forward as a community. And I can't thank you enough, Jay, for inviting me here for my fourth time to speak, and I'm going to touch on some different ideas that I have at the end of my appearance. But I want to start by acknowledging my family, of course, that Jay was kind enough to mention, and also my staff. My staff is here, and I want to introduce them and have them stand as I do. First, my chief of staff, Lisa Ryan. Lisa, where are you? Lisa's been with me since day one and has had a variety of titles. Her current title is Chief of Staff, and that's going to be hers for as long as she wants it. Hopefully that'll be a long time. I also have with me my policy director, John Guillahan, who's also been with me since day one. John, please stand. The newest addition to my staff, who does all my business affairs work, Linda Fleener. Linda, please be recognized. Now, I have a former chief of staff who is with me and is currently back on my staff, not in the chief of staff position. He does all my social media and does a lot of my community affairs. He was also, interestingly enough, one of my opponents when I ran for this office in the first place back in 2015, Steve Nikotopoulos. They're all important. They all do a great job. But this next position, and any alderman will tell you that, even the freshman aldermen that I've talked to who have only been on the job a couple of months have told me that they've already recognized the importance of your ward superintendent. That person can make you look like a hero, or that person can make you look like a bumbling fool. It's a very important job. I hope he's here. John Drosos. John, are you here? He couldn't make it, but let's give him a shout-out anyway. Hopefully he's either at home or he's out in one of the alleys right now setting some rat traps. I have another former chief of staff. As you can see, that's a busy seat with a rotating body. I have a former chief of staff who is with me. He currently works in New York City, but he does a little consulting work for me, too. Christian Ficarra. Christian, please stand. So So as you can see, once you become my chief of staff and eventually leave, you don't leave my orbit. I collect chiefs of staff, and I like to keep them close to me. It really is a big part of the key to the success that I've had as alderman. I didn't have an opponent in the last election, and I truly believe that the effectiveness of my staff, the way the ward office runs, is the reason for that. It's because we respond to every request. We try our best to satisfy the residents of my diverse ward. And there really weren't a whole lot of legitimate complaints out there as far as the nuts and bolts of the way a neighborhood is supposed to be run. So I give my staff all the credit. Thank you, guys. You make me shine. You make me look good every day. And I can't show you enough appreciation. Thank you for all you do. Okay, now on to the body of the presentation. I really wanted to talk today about the state of the City of Chicago's finances. With Mayor Lightfoot about to unveil her first budget, we've had a sneak preview of some, not much, but some of the elements of that. And I really wanted to expand on that and talk about it because it's so important. But Jay told me that I had to talk about Lincoln's Yard. And everywhere I go, that's all people ask me about. That's all they want to hear is Lincoln's Yard. So, all right, let's get this over with. You want to talk about Lincoln's Yard? There's Lincoln's Yard. It's in Springfield. It's on 7th Street. It's the only house he's ever owned. You know, he and Mary Todd lived there for a few years. It's a nice yard. They had a couple of goats, a golden doodle named Max. I have nothing more to say about Lincoln's Yard. There it is. So let's move on to the budget, shall we? Now, as you can see and as you know, we have a structural deficit. Mayor Lightfoot had identified that early on. She assembled what I consider to be a top-notch fiscal and budgetary team. And one of the first things that they did was try to get a handle on exactly what the structural deficit is and what the source of this imbalance between our revenue and our spending is, so she could address the causes. So this was in the first briefing that we were provided. The structural budget deficit is $838 million. But what I want to highlight on this chart, though, is revenue is up. It is projected to increase this year above even our most optimistic projections, next year too. So revenue is growing. It's growing at a rate that outpaces inflation. In fact, for the past 10 years, our revenue in the city of all sources has grown by over 20%, outpacing inflation and all the other indexes. Expenditures and debt is another matter, and that is the focus of this chart. What this chart doesn't tell you is that we're now up to $27 billion in total long-term debt. In that same 40-year period, that revenue has increased by 20%, our accumulated debt has increased by 40%. And not all of that is what we would consider healthy debt. A lot of that is debt to pay off other debt. In fact, that's one of the things that I would give Mayor Emanuel credit for. He did reduce the cost of our borrowing. Our average interest rate right now is getting closer to 3%, down from 6%, which was the high that it hit back in 2015. He eliminated scoop and toss. That was something he campaigned on. That was something I campaigned on, which was one of the most egregious budget practices you can. It's basically paying interest on interest and allowing that to accumulate. There's no way out of that. It's a trap, and it can't be sustained. It had to end. It had a price tag. The mayor was willing to pay it. The city council was willing to pay it. And that is one thing that Mayor Lightfoot inherited from Mayor Emanuel that I think even she would admit was a good thing. He did some of the difficult work and some of the heavy lifting on eliminating scoop and toss. But we still have this debt problem, and we have a pension problem, of course. We have another couple of years on the ramp up for pension payments before we go to an actuarially mandated pension amount, and we don't know what that is. That's one of the problems we face right now is the uncertainty. We know the pension debt that we have to pay this year and next year, and from that point forward, the actuaries are going to tell us, and we're going to have to find a way to meet those amounts as our pension debt continues to accumulate. Our investment returns have not been what we wanted them to be. I think probably a lot of people in this room could say the same thing about your own personal portfolios. It's been a challenge, and that is factored into this current structural deficit of $838 million that you see. Now, what's the solution? Well, on the revenue side, I just wanted to point this out. The Progressive Caucus, some of my colleagues in the City Council, have presented a revenue solution that they're advocating that would result in $4.3 billion in new revenue without touching the property tax. I like that part of it. I like the fact that they're saying we can't really look at the property tax right now. I represent a ward that has a very high base of assessed valuation. In fact, one of the statistics that I like to cite every time I talk about the current state of fiscal affairs in the city of Chicago is the fact that two wards out of 50 account for nearly 40% of all property tax revenue that's collected in the city of Chicago. My ward, the second ward, Alderman Riley's ward, the 42nd ward, which includes the Loop. When you combine those two wards, it's nearly 40% of all the property tax revenue that we have to work with. So it's incumbent upon me to suggest to my colleagues in the city council that we can't continue to go back to the property tax and raise it yet again, as we just did in 2015. People simply can't afford to pay more. We're making neighborhoods unaffordable. So you take that off the table, what does that leave? Well, the Progressive Caucus had an answer. You could see there's a lot of things on there, and these are their projections as to how much it would raise. I would take an issue with some of that. For example, the LaSalle Street tax, they're claiming would raise $2 billion. I think the figure is closer to zero, actually. I think the figure is zero, because the day we pass the LaSalle Street tax is the day that LaSalle Street moves to Indiana. We know that. They've told us that. That's going to happen. We can't afford to take that risk. We need them here. There's some other ideas on there. I'm not going to prejudge everything, because I think we are going to be looking at some of these things. But the point is, we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. We have a debt problem. We have a management problem, and we have a pension problem. We have to look at that first. Our first reaction can't be to go to every source of potential untapped revenue and grab as much as we can in the hopes that this massive influx of new tax dollars will help us get out of our difficulties. That's not responsible government, and I just don't think that's the right approach. So to simply treat it as a revenue problem isn't the right thing to do. And as I said, you could see our revenue without touching anything, without a single tax increase, is projected to increase this year and next year just through natural revenue growth. So my admonition to my colleagues in the city council is, please don't look to raise taxes first. Let's look to cut expenses, contain expenses, manage the pension and the debt problem better, and see if we can make some progress that way. Okay, I'm going to talk about Lincoln Yards. There's really no way out of it. It's consumed my life, really, for the past 2 to 3 years. It's been just an all-encompassing issue that has demanded everything I've ever learned in being a public servant. There was a couple of members of the Daly family here. Mike Daly, Patrick Thompson is here. All the things I learned about public service working for the Daly family all those years helped me and helped prepare me for what ultimately is a intense focus on trying to do the right thing when it's not always clear what that is. In a complex, dynamic environment, it isn't always clear exactly what the right thing to do was. And I started off by being open-minded. I was not necessarily going to approve what ultimately became Lincoln Yards. Some people think it was a done deal. I hear that all the time. I know it wasn't. I know that because I lived it, and I made my decision early on. I was going to allow the process to play out. I was going to manage the process and be a steward of a public process and let it lead where it led. And it ultimately led to fruition and approval, and I'll get to that. But for me, it started while I was a candidate. It started when I was running in this, our favorite poster child for gerrymandering, the second ward. Another conspiracy theory that I hear quite often is that this ward was designed to eliminate the planned manufacturing district and clear the way for Lincoln Yards, that the whole thing was cooked up in a back room, in a smoke-filled room in a deal. I know that isn't the case, because here's where I lived. And by the way, we're not talking about the lobster. I killed the lobster at my first City Club speech. The lobster is no longer the metaphor for the second ward. A bike is the metaphor for the second ward. We only refer to it as a bike, and my staff knows they get severely disciplined if they ever use the L word. It's a bike, okay? I lived in the lower spoke in the front wheel for 15 years. Lincoln Yards is up near the seat. So when I ran as a candidate, I had only the vaguest knowledge of the issues surrounding the PMD and surrounding what eventually would become Lincoln Yards. And as a candidate, I had to educate myself before I took a position. And so I did my research. And what I found was the planned manufacturing district, number one, which was the first one that was created in the city of Chicago, had a 41% decrease in manufacturing jobs between 2002 and 2014. Industrial land use, when the PMD was created in that area, 73% of the land in the North Branch Corridor was industrial. By the time I ran for that office as a candidate, that figure had dropped to 23%. It appeared to me that the decision was made for me. Market forces made that decision. The PMD had done some good things over the years, but it had run its course, and it was time for it to go. And I took the position as a candidate that if I was elected, I would eliminate the planned manufacturing district and open up the area to mixed-use development. That was a controversial decision. There's a lot of entrenched interests that didn't want that to happen, but I felt it was the right thing to do. So I took that position publicly and felt it was time to live up to that campaign pledge when I got elected. That's how it started for me. Little did I know what it would lead to. But the first thing I did, trying to live up to that pledge, was I had a design charrette in May of 2016 at DePaul University. And we got the DePaul grad students at their School of Sustainable Urban Design involved in it. They did an outstanding job. We got over 200 people, mostly just residents, people in the community who were concerned. At the time, Finkel Steel still hadn't even been sold. Lincoln Yards didn't exist, even on paper. No one had envisioned it yet. But we knew something was going to happen there because we were well on track to eliminating the PMD and changing the zoning. So I got everybody I could together in the same room and said to my residents, what do you guys want? What do you want to see happen in this now vacant parcel of land? And as a result of that process, the grad students who oversaw it prepared a report, and we have six recommendations that came out of that design charrette. Six, and you can see them here. Expanding the 606 trail, building a new transit hub, creating jobs, a new north-south bridge over the Chicago River, traffic improvements, and new parks and open space. Again, this is long before Sterling Bay even appeared on the scene as owners of the Finkel site. Well, we did it. We're expanding the Bloomingdale Trail. As part of the plan development that is passed for Lincoln Yards, the 606 trail will be extended over the Kennedy, the Metro Tracks, and the Chicago River, opening up commuting opportunities to that three-mile bike trail that is so wildly successful. Half of it will be paid by TIF, and the other half will be paid by Sterling Bay out of their own funds. So we did it. A new transit hub was asked for. This is the new transit hub. This will replace the Clybourne Metro Station, which, if you've seen it lately, it's probably one of the least attractive stations in the entire metro system. This will be a multimodal transit hub. It will serve CTA buses. It will serve metro trains. Hopefully, it will serve the light rail system that we plan to build. It will also serve shuttle buses that can work for some of the corporations who will eventually be tenants of Lincoln Yards, and it can serve private rideshare. It's designed for all modalities of transportation. We're even talking about a CTA shuttle that could connect this station with the Brown Line and the Red Line and the Blue Line stations nearby. So we checked that box, too. That was one of the six. Creating new jobs in the corridor, as we'll get into later, 24,000 permanent jobs and 10,000 construction jobs will be created by Lincoln Yards. North-South Bridge over the Chicago River. That was the first time I heard the suggestion that with all the east-west bridges that exist there, having a north-south orientation for a bridge would help relieve a lot of the congestion when the east route, the east-west routes get backed up. So the first bridge that we're going to build as part of the Lincoln Yards development, and they're going to start work on it, design work on it is already underway. Hopefully we can start work on it next year, is a north-south orientation between Dominick Street and Southport, which are both north-south streets. There's a bend in the river there, which allows for a north-south bridge. So that was a suggestion that came for the first time out of this design charrette. It's in the Lincoln Yards plan. Neighborhood traffic improvements, that was something we insisted on. The North-South Bridge isn't the only one we're going to build. We're building two other bridges. And we believe that will really relieve a lot of the traffic, especially in the rush hour periods where everyone's trying to get from one side of the river to the other. And then you've got Goose Island there with those two bridges. So to build three more bridges will really be a relief valve to allow for traffic during the peak rush periods to flow at a much faster rate. New parks and open spaces. The framework plan called for a 12-acre park to be built somewhere in the north branch corridor. We're building 11 of that 12 acres just in Lincoln Yards alone. And it's going to have recreational opportunities. There's soccer fields that are already there. I'll get into that a little bit later in the presentation. But we did it. We accomplished an increase in recreational and open space as part of the Lincoln Yards plan because it's one thing the community insisted on. So I wound up supporting this despite the fact that it certainly cost me a significant amount of political capital. I took a lot of heat for this, but it was the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do. It actually turned out to be an easy decision at the end of this deliberative process to support Lincoln Yards, to advocate for it, to convince 32 of my colleagues on the City Council to vote for this, despite the political heater environment that had been created. There's really five reasons why I chose to support this, and five reasons why I maintain to this day it was the right decision for the City of Chicago. The first reason, for the critical need of infrastructure build-out that Lincoln Yards will represent in the neighborhood. The second, as I mentioned, the new parks. Third is the jobs and the economic development that it'll spark. Fourth is affordable housing. And fifth is the significant community support that did exist for this. Now, if you're a reporter or if you're 90% of my Twitter followers, you don't believe number five is true. It is true, and I'll get into that and I'll show you why. Let's talk about number one. If you look at the area where Lincoln Yards is scheduled to be, the word blight has been thrown around. In fact, it was even the topic of the recent lawsuit. I don't like to use the word blight because that does connotate something that may not be easily associated with a neighborhood like Lincoln Park. What I prefer to do is call it an infrastructure deficit, which it is. It's a lack of roads. It's a lack of bridges. The street grid ends there because for over 100 years, this was an industrial area, so you didn't need residential streets. You didn't need side streets. They weren't necessary. They don't exist to this day. There's so much of this land that isn't readily conducive to any kind of redevelopment. That needs to change. That needs to happen right now. We actually need those three bridges over the Chicago River today. Even without Lincoln Yards, the need is great, and there's really no other way to pay for it than a development like this, which will spark the kind of tax revenue that we could use. So it's really necessary going forward. This is, by the way, a rendering of what the Dominick Bridge could potentially look like. I would love to get this. Nobody in my position, no one in the City Council would turn down a new bridge in their neighborhood if you had a river going through it. The problem is I don't have any other way to pay for it other than a development like this. This is something else we need today, immediately. It's the untangling of the notorious Elston-Armitage-Ashland intersection. We recently did this to Elston and Damon. It decreased travel times by 60% through that intersection. Wildly successful. The same type of engineering challenge exists here, and the same type of solution is readily available. Again, no other way to pay for it. I'm not going to get that money from Springfield. We're not going to take it out of general revenue. There's no other way to pay for this critically needed infrastructure improvement other than a development of the scope and scale of Lincoln Yards. Here's a listing of some of the other things that Lincoln Yards will pay for, the additional bridges, the Riverwalk. You know, right now the condition of the river is appalling. It's chunks of broken concrete and mud washing into the river with every rainstorm. And we need to improve that, too. As we know now, the river is our second lakefront. It's really become a gem. It's a tourist attraction, and people value it in a way that they didn't years ago. This is one stretch of the river that's in desperate need of renovation, and Lincoln Yards will provide the funding to pay for it. Parks and open space, as I mentioned previously, we have a commitment for an 11-acre contiguous park that will be built. Fleet Fields, the soccer stadium, is already open, and it's a huge success. We've got high school, Chicago Public High School teams are playing there. Girls in the Game is practicing there. We have open field time where I take my four-year-old out there and we kick the ball around. It's a huge success. And the community has already embraced it. We're very excited about the future. That's just the beginning. But Parks and Open Space is a key integral part of this plan. You could see here the south part on the river and then the north part, which will have some passive opportunities. But that is an 11-acre contiguous park separated by a river, and that was something that the community insisted on, and I'm delighted that it made it into the plan. 606 Trail, I already mentioned. There's some engineering challenges there, getting under the Kennedy and over the Metro tracks. It's not going to be easy, but it's possible, and the designers are currently working on that right now. Citywide economic impact. This is a $6 billion project. This is really going to move the needle in the city of Chicago. Those 24,000 jobs that I mentioned, those are jobs for everyone. Jobs for everyone. There'll be jobs that require, you know, advanced degrees and PhDs in engineering. There'll be jobs that require a high school education. There'll be jobs for the city of Chicago here. And this is what we need. This is what we need to move our city forward. 10,000 construction jobs. With 30%, 10% MBEWB, which Mayor Lightfoot successfully negotiated as part of the deal to get her support, there's really very little that can have such a measurable impact on a regional economy like Chicago. Projects like this, projects like the 78, they're at that level. And it's important that we embrace them. It's important that we tell the entire world Chicago is open for business. Chicago is willing to take these bold ideas, as we always have been, and improve them and incorporate them into what we do, because ultimately we all benefit from it. Now, here's probably the biggest benefit. This is the current site, and that's their current tax bill. $6 million a year in property taxes. In the total budget, that's basically a rounding error. That's what it could be, $170 million a year at full development. Now, that figure is a projection, and I actually want to give a shout-out to Tribune reporter Hal Dardick, who, Hal, are you here? Are you in the room? He wrote a good story. You know, I can't say I agree with the premise of some of it, but it was an accurate story. It was a fair story, and he did his homework, and he did his research, and he used a formula to come up with that figure. That's a projection for at the end of the build-out of Lincoln Yards, which is at least 10 years in the future, what will the tax bill be for that parcel that's currently $6 million, $170 million. What's going to happen to that tax money? At the end of the TIF, it goes into the general fund. And hopefully the TIF is not going to last 23 years. We'll get into that. But there's no way to get to $170 million. There's no way to get from there to there without building it. Without building it. If I had said no to Lincoln Yards, what would happen? I don't know. But it wouldn't be $170 million of value for the entire tax base of the city of Chicago. Affordable housing was another reason. Since the ARO, the Affordable Housing Ordinance, was created 12 years ago, the total number of housing units that ordinance created in 12 years is a little over 800. And some of those haven't been built yet. They're still in the pipeline. With one project, we're building 800 units with the possibility for 300 more. 600 of them will be on site in Lincoln Park, an area where there's no question we have a severe shortage of affordable housing. This one project more than doubled the number of affordable housing units mandated by the ARO ordinance in 12 years. Again, if you want to move the needle big, you have to think big, and this project did it. I want to give a special credit to Alderman Burnett, who is one of the strongest and most reasonable affordable housing advocates in the city council. He helped us come to this compromise, and he's the one that pushed for us to double the number of units that we were going to build on site. They didn't have to build any on site, by the way. And we started out saying 300, and with Alderman Burnett getting involved, he negotiated a better deal, and we've got 600 units that we'll be building on site at Lincoln Yards. So the fifth reason that I supported it was, so did a lot of other people. Believe it or not, despite what you might have read in some of the news accounts, there was a lot of support for Lincoln Yards, including, thank you, the Chicago Tribune editorial board. We support Lincoln Yards. They said it. Now, at the same time, I will grant you, they wanted more time to consider it. They didn't think we should have voted on this in April. The reason we voted on it in April is because I'm a member of a legislative body. My job is to pass legislation. We had the votes in April. That's why I did it. It's really that simple. We probably wouldn't have had the votes in May or June. Who knows? We had the votes in April. I passed it in April. The Tribune supported it. Enough said. Who else supported it? Cranes. Cranes supported it. All these guys supported it. Credible organizations, organizations that I think are represented by the people in this room. They called me. They sent me email. They sent me letters. They told me why it was important to them. They told me why this was the right thing to do. They told me they wanted me to pass Lincoln Yards. I didn't do this by myself, and I wasn't defying logic. This was the right thing to do, and many, many civic leaders agreed that it was. So did my voters. I did a poll. I did a poll in my ward. 42% of my voters in the second ward had a favorable opinion of Lincoln Yards when we asked them. 42%, despite the overwhelmingly negative and, in my opinion, biased reporting that took place on this, and despite the vilification of the TIF concept, 42% of my voters who are affected by this, by the way, talk about NIMBY factors, you know, tall buildings and traffic, that's always a sensitive issue to a new development. 42% of my neighbors told me they supported this and they thought it was the right thing to do for their city. All that together led to the conclusion that it was the right vote for me to take and it was the right vote to push for. Now that brings us to today. We have work to do, and Sterling Bay and their contractors have been doing it. The site, after 100 years of industrial use, you can imagine the condition that it was found in. So far, they've removed over 25,000 tons of highly contaminated soil. They found 30 underground storage tanks, and unfortunately, not all of them were empty. Can you imagine what might have been in some of those storage tanks? So it was a very challenging environmental remediation program that they've completed on the north side. They've done a little work on the south side. That's where the soccer fields are now. But there's a lot more work to do. And they're doing it at their expense. The days of Superfund, unfortunately, are over. We can't count on the federal government to come in and bail us out as a local government every time we find a highly contaminated brownfield. We have to do it ourselves. And the cost of environmental remediation grows exponentially every year. It's not an easy thing to do, and we no longer have readily available public financing sources for it. It has to be done with private money. It's important to do it for future generations. We've got to clean up the mess that was made by those who came before us. Again, I can think of no other way to find the money to pay for this needed environmental cleanup other than through a private development of the scope and scale of Lincoln Yards. They're working on what's called the 360 jobs program in conjunction with Related Midwest and some of the other developers. This is designed to really enhance the minority participation in this program. As I mentioned, the mayor significantly increased the minimum bar for minority participation to such a degree that there are those who tell me we don't have enough minority contractors right now in Chicago to do the job, even if we hired all of them right now. We'd still be short hands and bodies. So this is to seed some new companies, to give people the training that they need and the background that they need to get them ready to go to work, because we're going to meet those minority hiring goals. We're just going to need to bring in some new people in order to do it, and I would argue that's a good thing. I mentioned the soccer fields that are up and running. It's a citywide program. There's kids from all over the city of Chicago who are playing soccer every day at Fleet Fields. And that's an important point because I've heard, well, we don't want to build a park just for Lincoln Park. You know, they don't need it. Well, we all need it, right? There's no Trumpian wall around Lincoln Yards. It's open to everyone. In fact, we're inviting participation from some of the neighbors that don't have the same opportunities that we have in Lincoln Park. We want to share this with them. It's as much for them as it is for us. And if you go out there today, you see kids from Chicago public schools all over the city enjoying this asset. And I'm very proud of that. So what's ahead for Lincoln Yards? Well, As I said, we're hopefully going to get started on the bridge. One of the things that I mandated in the run-up to the vote was that we would have ongoing community participation. So we're forming a park advisory committee. Even though right now this land is privately owned, it's not owned by the park district. I'd like someday to see it owned by the park district. In the meantime, we're forming a park district type of park advisory council to oversee it. So even though it isn't publicly owned, it will function identically to any park district operated facility. And that's important because the kids don't know the difference. I've been taking my 4-year-old Ryan to the new park in Streeterville, Bennett Park, which is owned by Related Midwest. Not once has he complained when he's going down the slide that Related owns this and not the park district. He doesn't know. He doesn't care. So the same thing applies here. We're going to build this park one way or another. After it's done, then we'll have the debate about whether the park district should own it or not. The reason they don't want it, frankly, is they just don't have the maintenance budget right now. So it's kind of a sad state of affairs when we can't even gift a park over to the park district because they're afraid of the impact that it would have on their maintenance budget. But we'll deal with that after the park is done. In the meantime, we're spending TIF money, right? The third rail of Chicago politics. We're spending TIF money, and this is an important point that I keep emphasizing. Every TIF dollar that is spent in Lincoln Yards is going to something that is always built with tax money. A road, a bridge, a park, a transit station. That's paid for it with tax money. TIF is tax money. There's no scam here. There's no shell game. We're spending tax money for things that the public will own, not a dollar of the TIF budget for Lincoln Yards is going directly to the developer. It's not going to anything that they will own. It's going to things that we will own. On the contrary, the developer is actually paying for some things that we will own too. The total cost of the infrastructure build-out in Lincoln Yards is a little over $800 million. Only $500 million of that is TIF. So the $300-plus million is being paid by the developer. They're actually subsidizing us, not the other way around. And you see how the figures break out there. All that is public good. Not everyone agrees. Here's the number one anti-TIF crusader in the city of Chicago. Chicago doesn't know exactly what TIF stands for or how it works, but they know it's a scam. Well, my goal is to explain to them how it works and what it stands for, and then maybe they won't think it's a scam. Not everyone thinks it's a scam. You know who doesn't think it's a scam? These guys. In theory, TIF is a great policy and we want to see it continue. This is in the mayor's transition report, and this page from the mayor's transition report was written by her youth team. These are kids from the Mikvah Challenge, from After School Matters, from some of the other CPS after school programs, who the mayor put them together and asked them to write parts of her transition report. And this is what they concluded after looking at the issue of TIF. Bad news for the Chicago reader, the young generation is not reading your publication. I don't know how you're going to handle that. But so what's the difference between these two opinions on this financing device we call tax increment financing? This is also from the mayor's TIF task force calling on the city to form a blue ribbon committee or an advisory committee to look at TIF reform. And here I will agree with our friend from the Chicago Reader. There are obvious reforms that are indicated by the TIF program. We're over TIFed, right? We probably have right now nearly 140 TIFs in the city of Chicago. Are they all necessary? Probably not. Are they all limiting their funds to publicly owned infrastructure like we are in Lincoln Yards? Probably not. There have been abuses in the past. So we need to talk about TIF reform, and I've asked the mayor if I could be on this advisory committee. After the experience I just had, I feel like I'm uniquely qualified. I've become, you know, the poster child for TIFs, so I might as well get some good out of that. And I do have some ideas about TIF reform going forward. But here's some things that TIF has built recently that I think we can all agree are good things. I think we can all agree we want these things. We want a new bridge over the Chicago River. I mentioned the example of untangling a six-way intersection, which we did with TIF money, just a little bit north of the Lincoln Yard site. The Green Line station and rapid transit improvements, all of these things are necessary, and they're paid for with TIF money. Here's what the Civic Federation has to say, and I think this is an important point. Hopefully this will help end the debate once and for all, because the Civic Federation is a highly respected organization. TIF does not freeze or take away tax revenue from overlapping governments, such as the Chicago Public Schools. This is because tax-capped governments set their levies independent of taxable value, mostly basing annual property tax increases on inflation instead. I fought hard to get this in the Lincoln Yards deal. And going back to the figure that we got from the Chicago Tribune of $170 million, if Sterling Bay can keep their construction project on track and build Lincoln Yards in 10 years, that's ambitious. They think they can do it. I wish them well. At that point, you'll have $170 million in property tax revenue captured by the TIF, not available to anyone else. If that's the case, and we don't expand the TIF and we don't extend the TIF, we could end that TIF in 5 more years. So that TIF could last 15 years, and at the end of that 15-year process, we'll have Lincoln Yards, we'll have 3 new bridges, we'll have beautiful parks, we'll have 24,000 jobs, and we'll have $170 million a year in tax money that we wouldn't have otherwise. Debate over. I want to turn to another burning issue. This is a level 1 hazmat fire in the neighborhood that I now live in. Back in December 2015, this was the scrapyard General Iron. They had this unfortunate fire, which I don't believe the cause was ever identified. Sent a black plume of smoke throughout the neighborhood. This is General Iron today, right across the river from the Lincoln Yards site. Now, this is not in Lincoln Yards, but it is in the TIF district that was created for Lincoln Yards, and that's what's happening today. Some of you may have seen the announcement. We finally reached an agreement. General Iron will cease operations at this location at the end of 2020. And I want to thank Mayor Lightfoot. She was instrumental in helping me get that cessation agreement signed, and it was a very difficult, long, contentious process. No one came away from that bargaining table feeling particularly good, which is always the sign that a true compromise was formed, and General Iron will cease operations at that location. What will happen? Well, how about that? Ideally, this could be the site of the proposed North Branch Park and Preserve. So to go from that to that, and that is the site. You see the North Avenue Bridge in the background just to the left is currently the site of those scrap piles that were in the previous picture. It's a multi-million dollar project, hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't have a clear path from here to there yet. I'm in conversation with the mayor about this. She's encouraged me to continue that conversation. She hasn't said no. The previous administration did, for whatever reason. So it's a new day, and that's another thing that I'm very encouraged, and I want to publicly thank the mayor for being open to this idea, because to turn the site of a former scrapyard into something as beautiful as this, and again, that's where the piles currently exist along the river, would be one of the greatest gains that we could possibly have in the city of Chicago. Now, going back to TIF, we have approximately $400 million of available space in the TIF budget that hasn't been allocated yet. If all the projections hold true, there's potentially $400 million that we could budget for other things. Now, we're going to need other things as we go forward. Could this be one of them? It could. The possibilities are there. I want to talk just a couple other things as I wrap up. I want to talk about the Lakeshore Drive Improvement Plan. I talked about that at every one of my City Club speeches. So I feel the need to just mention it here. We're trying to make some progress. We have a new administration in Springfield, obviously, but we really have no choice. We have to do something. Lakeshore Drive is crumbling. It needs to be replaced. The roadbed is beyond its useful service life. And as long as we're rebuilding Lakeshore Drive, I think it would be a tragic waste of opportunity if we don't also expand the parkland there and rebuild this intersection, which is every bit as problematic as Ashland and Elston is. If you were a traffic engineer, you would be fired for proposing this today. It's just that bad. The lake was angry that day, my friends. And the solution right now, you saw the news coverage, Jersey walls. We're going to put Jersey walls up to try and hold Lake Michigan back. It's not going to work. Who here has a house in Grand Beach? I know some of you do. Where is Grand Beach lately, right? It's gone. You've lost your beach. the types of erosion we're seeing due to climate change, fluctuating lake levels. We can't get our way out of this with Jersey walls. We're going to have to rebuild Lakeshore Drive, something like this, which would protect the drive and also allow for great recreational opportunities. Here's the existing Oak Street Beach. Here's what it could look like. I've talked to Governor Pritzker about this. You know, the $45 billion capital bill is out there, you know, and we don't know what that's going to be spent on. I'm pushing for this plan to finally come to fruition and get it off the drawing board. Another issue I'm working on is cured-in-place piping. We have, I think, about 500 miles of water main to replace in the next couple of years. We're probably about halfway through our total water main replacement project. And as you live in Chicago, you probably know we don't have streets in Chicago. What we have are utility trenches that sometimes we'll let you drive on. Everything you could think of is under the street. And I went through one of the most difficult pipe replacement projects maybe in the city's history on Division Street a couple of years ago. And it just was a disaster. You know, the inconvenience, the dust, the noise, the conflicts. Once you start digging, you find all kinds of things under there that nobody knew was there. All sorts of ancient pipes from, I think, the Roman Empire, you know, might still be down there. This technology doesn't require open-cut trenching. You build a small hole at either end and go down with equipment and line the piping with epoxy. This was something else I tried and couldn't get done under the previous administration. And once again, Mayor Lightfoot tried to do the opposite of what the former mayor did. So that was the first thing I said to her was, Mayor Lightfoot, Mayor Emanuel didn't like this. We have a pilot program. That's simple. So starting next year, we're going to do two things. We're going to try this on a water main, and we're going to try this on a private sewer. And if it works here, as it's worked in other places, it's worked in Toronto, by the way. Toronto saves $300 a foot on their pipe project by using this technology. Now, I'm not suggesting this is a panacea, and I'm not suggesting it's appropriate in all cases. It may be appropriate in some cases where there's old-growth trees, conflicts with other utilities like on Division Street, but it is a tool we should have in our toolbox, and we won't know if it's really going to work in a climate and an environment like Chicago's unless we try. So that's what the pilot program is all about, and I'm grateful to Mayor Lightfoot for being willing to experiment with this. Another issue I'm going to be working on in 2020 is, you know, that 8 feet of space between the sidewalk and the middle of the street, we call it the curb, it's changed. It isn't what it used to be. It's a loading dock. It's a bike lane. It's a place for Uber and Lyft to sit there with their four-way flashers on. It's a lot of things. It should be utilized for travel in many cases. Chicago Avenue is an example of that. With the One Chicago development, we have to redesign Chicago Avenue in its entirety between Michigan Avenue and Orleans Street. We need that curb space. We can't have people illegally obstructing it. We can't have cars blocking it. We have the bus link lanes downtown. They're not working properly because of driver behavior, because people block it, people park in it illegally, and people use it for everything except what it's supposed to be used for. This is from New York. This is camera technology that they're using to enforce parking restrictions. It's time for us to get over our stigma about camera enforcing. We know what happened with the red light scandal. Everybody remembers that, but that was years ago. That company isn't even around anymore. They've reformed, and executives are long gone. So this taint that we have around using cameras to enforce traffic laws has to change. We need help from Springfield on this. Driver behavior can change. People need to know they can't illegally park in a bike lane. There's I want to give a shout out to Christina Whitehead, who started an organization called Bike Lane Uprising. And what they're, I think I was the first alderman that she met with. What they're doing for bike lanes, we need to apply that to the curb lane all over the city. Traffic is no longer flowing the way it was intended to, partially because of the popularity of rideshare. But we have to fix this. We have to fix this. And changing driver behavior is going to be key to doing that. Video enforcement could be a big part of the solution. And I'm not looking for revenue, by the way, when I say that. Ideally, we'd have a video enforcement system that really wouldn't generate any revenue at all because everyone would be afraid of it. They wouldn't want to park their car in a bike lane. They wouldn't want to turn the curb into their loading zone because they know that they'll be fined. So if that would be possible, we need help from Springfield. So I'm going to be pushing for that in the coming session. And that's it. That's what I'm working on.
So the next time that we have Alderman Hopkins come, we're starting like at 11:30. And only because he has so much to talk about. We are clearly not going to get to all these questions. There are some great questions. We'll get them to your...
That was part of my plan.
Well played again, Alderman. I'm going to have you read that question, and I'm going to ask you a couple while you're reading that one. So I only have time for a couple, so don't get too comfortable here. Mara Georges asks, is the Alderman going to seek to change the shape of his ward in the next redistricting?
As the poster child for gerrymandering, I constantly remind people I didn't draw it, I just ran in it. It is going to change, and I support redistricting reform. This is the first time in history that we have both a mayor and a governor in Illinois who have both gone on the record as supporting redistricting reform. So that could mean a variety of things, but I think the best approach is an automated system. Computer technology exists today. It can draw the map without having human intervention, because once you have people like me who have a stake in the outcome involved, politics becomes the dominant force in drawing the map. That's what happened. That's why the second ward is what it is. And the technology exists today to solve that problem. So I would hope that Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker can get on the same page as far as what needs to happen. But I was one of the first aldermen to sign on to the Committee for Fair Maps for redistricting reform, and I continue to support it. I'll run somewhere. You know, it doesn't have to look like that. I'm not particularly concerned about that. But we can't have people drawing maps for political reasons anymore. It's just not right.
Great answer. And where you run, you'll win. So we're not really worried about that. Julie Wlock, am I saying your name right? I was close, huh? I should get some credit for being close on a name, don't you think? So she says, thank you for your leadership with regard to CIPP, Cured in Place Pipe. We just talked about it. I would like your opinion on the probability that the pilot studies will be conducted professionally, expertly, and without bias.
Well, I've asked the mayor if I could have one of the pilots in my ward for that very reason. I'd like the ability to monitor it. The last time we tried this, there was some questions about whether the pilot was fairly administered. Somebody might have put their thumb on the scale. But we're going to hire a consultant. We're going to have someone who has an engineering background and will oversee this pilot, and we don't want them to have a dog in the fight. You know, this is a controversial decision. The unions aren't really comfortable with this yet, so there's a lot of political forces at play, but we're going to hire a neutral third party to basically referee this thing and oversee the pilot program, make sure it's done properly, and make sure the results are evaluated based on scientific criteria, not political reasons.
That's why where he runs, he'll win. So Stephen asked this question, but I still need to ask it. So you kind of touched on it a little bit with the environmental stuff, but what are some of the most important and pressing environmental concerns that the city of Chicago needs to focus on for the next 5 years and forward?
Environmental concerns?
Environmental.
Yeah. Clearly, air quality is such a big thing. I know a lot more about it now than I did a few years ago just because of the work I've done with General Iron. But particulate air pollution is rampant in this city. PM 2.5 is among the most damaging components that you can inhale in your lungs. We have an asthma cluster. The neighborhood I live in Lincoln Park, is in the top 5% for asthma cases in the state of Illinois. That should not be. There's something wrong with our air quality, and I'm very glad that the mayor is reconstituting the Department of Environment, and the Inspector General recently came out with a report that found that in the last 5 years, the Department of Public Health really dropped the ball on air quality monitoring. That has to change. We need more inspectors. They need to be out there every day monitoring the air we breathe, identifying point source pollutants, finding violators, and shutting them down.
So, Damien, you asked a question about General Iron with respect to that. And are you in the room? Okay, Damien lucked up because you know I don't ask questions when they're not in the room. But he answered the question earlier. This is going to be the last question just for time's sake. Malcolm Kamen, Law Offices of Malcolm. Are you here, Malcolm? Okay. Do you see a solution for the affordable housing problem that does not negatively impact tax revenues? I know you talked about it a little bit, but can you?
Yeah, there's no solution to the affordable housing deficit that doesn't involve public funds and doesn't involve a public investment. It has to be a public-private partnership. The mayor and our new commissioner of housing have both said that they are dissatisfied with the current system of trying to encourage private developers to build affordable housing because it's the right thing to do, and then mandating that they do it to a certain degree and then watching them buy their way out of it and pay fees so they don't have to do it. That isn't working because we're not getting affordable housing units built. The reason we're not getting affordable housing units built is because a private developer loses money on every one they build. That is a fact. They're never going to do it just because you ask them to. That won't work, and we have to accept that. So once we accept that, we have to find a way to invest in affordable housing solutions in conjunction with the private sector so that the people who know how to build housing for a profit are willing to do it for the social good. We're not there yet. And mandating it, telling private developers they must lose money, it's just not going to work. They won't do it. So we have to accept that as we seek to reform the ARO. This one question I also want to respond to about TIF funding and the total amount of TIF. The $1.2 billion is the figure that gets thrown out for the Lincoln Yards TIF. That's actually higher than reality. But I do want to point out that right now the top 10 TIFs in the city of Chicago, in terms of their valuation, if you take off number one, which is the TIF that we created to rebuild the Red Line, let's go with the top nine. It's $2.5 billion of tax money that is tied up by those top nine TIFs, not available to us. The good news is they're all scheduled to expire in the next 3 to 5 years. If we let them expire, $2.5 billion will flood back into the tax base for all of us to use for the schools and every other purpose. So part of TIF reform, I think, needs to be that we don't continue to extend TIFs. 23 years is a long time. If you can't accomplish your redevelopment goals in 23 years, you're doing something wrong. You're using the wrong tool. Let those TIFs expire and let that money go back into the tax base. So thank you.